So I was doing like $500 websites, baby, you know, anything that I could do. And the sad truth is that a $500 website and a $50,000 website often pretty much have exactly the same needs and are going to require exactly the same amount of time to build them. The only difference is you're going to be a lot skinnier at the end of doing one than the other.
Growing a business requires a holistic approach that extends beyond sales and marketing. This approach needs alignment among people, processes, and technologies. So if you're a business owner, operations, or finance leader looking to learn growth strategies from your peers and competitors, you're tuned into the right podcast. Welcome to the WBS Podcast, where scalable growth using business systems is our number one priority. Now, here is your host, Sam Gupta.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of the WBS Podcast. I'm Sam Gupta, your host and principal consultant at digital transformation consulting firm Elevate IQ. Pricing and discounting are two strategies to incentivize buyers to make a purchase decision. But there is always confusion where each would be appropriate. Also, pricing is often a sensitive area where most companies would rather undercharge in fear of losing market share or customers. Companies could use pricing strategies such as cost-plus, competition-based, value-based, price skimming, loss leader, penetration, dynamic, bundle, premium, and anchor. But they really understand the true potential in their applications. There are a lot of factors to consider when developing an e-commerce pricing strategies. Competition, ever-changing customer expectations, material costs, and shipping all play a role in pricing your products. To stay relevant, brands need to continue to re-evaluate their pricing strategy. But what are the best practices of pricing? In today's episode, we invited a panel of cross-functional experts for a live interview on LinkedIn who brings significant expertise to discuss pricing strategies in the e-commerce world. We covered many grounds in this episode, including the difference between pricing and discounting strategies. Finally, we also discussed the nuances of various pricing types, loss leaders, cost plus, and competitor-based, along with their pros and cons. With that, let's get to the conversation. Hello, hello, everyone. Welcome to today's show. For today's topic, we are going to be talking about pricing strategies. And this is related to our other topic that we have covered in the past. If you have not checked out, I would highly recommend checking that episode out. It was related to discounting strategies. We are going to be covering the differences in those two in this episode, and we are going to build a lot more on the pricing. So without further ado, we are going to start with everybody's intro. Steve, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. I guess you picked me because I had the biggest wisecracking grin at that moment. So my name is Steve Rice from Dotcom Jungle and the Globally Conscious Leader. And with Dotcom Jungle, we work in conjunction with the often siloed marketing, finance, and technology departments to make and implement wise technology choices that benefit all their stakeholders.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for being here, Steve. Your experience is going to be so beneficial for today's panel. Eric, can I move to you next for your intro?
Yeah, thank you, Steve. I'm Eric Landman. I'm the e-commerce division manager of Earthling Interactive. We are a development company. We're building e-commerce sites and web apps for quite a variety of companies and markets. We don't specialize in any particular thing. About half are B2B and about half are B2C. And I'm a Magento certified solution specialist. I've been involved in building about 50 sites out. Also, I've done some stuff in Shopify and a bunch of other platforms too over the years. And enjoy what I'm doing.
Okay, amazing. It's always a pleasure to have you always, Eric, on these panels. Thank you so much for being here. Okay, Dave Meyer, can I move to you next for your introduction, if you don't mind?
Absolutely. Hi, everybody. This is Dave from BusyWeb. So excited to be here for you today, Sam and team. We're BusyWeb is a growth marketing agency that works in the manufacturing and B2B services space. We help drive traffic to our customers. We help them convert traffic through marketing optimization and enablement and sales enablement programs to help you get your leads and convert your leads into real business. Thanks for the opportunity to chat today.
Okay, amazing. It's always a pleasure to have you, Dave. Thank you so much for joining today. And David Kreisler, I know you have been super kind today in picking the name David for today. I know that we have a little confusion in the room with 2 days. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, happy to. Thanks, Sam. Hey, everybody. My name is David Kreisler, and I own a company called the Kreisler Club, where we work with business owners to help them create the systems they need to get them to stop working in their business. I spent more than 20 years in the manufacturing space in operations directly and have worked with several other small business owners in terms of building out their e-commerce and have had many a pricing strategy conversation. So excited to get into this. Thanks for having me, Sam.
It's always fun to hang out with you, Dave. And I am super excited to have you for the first time on this series. Thank you so much for being here. Okay, Colin, can I move to you next for your introduction?
Absolutely. Thanks, Sam. So my name's Colin, and I'm a partner at Omnium. So we're an analytics, modeling, and strategic counsel firm, and we work with a lot of CPG brands, a lot of brick and mortar, as well as online. And we support primarily the sales and finance functions. So pricing has been a conversation that all of our clients are having right now. And with our mathematical background, it's a conversation I really enjoy having too.
Yeah. And on this panel, Colin, we typically like to stick to facts, but today it's going to be at a different level with your insight, from your data background. Thank you so much for being here. So we are going to dig right into the topic, and this is going to be, number one, we are going to understand the difference between pricing and discounting, because not sure if everybody really understand where each of them are going to be fit. Because at the end of the day, if you think about pricing and discounting, you are trying to help customers save money. Yes, right? But I mean, each of them have their own applications. So first, we are going to understand the difference between those two strategies and where they each are going to be applicable. And then we will dig deeper into the pricing strategies. So Steve, I'm actually going to start with you again. Okay, so tell us the differences between pricing and discounting strategies. And what is the real difference? I mean, how would you define, let's say, if somebody does not know, where they should be considering the pricing change or price reduction versus applying a discount?
Well, a pricing strategy is really the mechanism by which you're stating your value to the customer. And a discounting strategy is the mechanism by which you devalue that value that you've just stated. That would be the main difference, I think. Inside pricing strategies, you have a lot of names of things, ways to go about it. And in your original post on LinkedIn to announce this, you named most of them. And I'm going to rip through them really quick for everybody. Because you've got cost plus pricing, competition-based or competitive pricing, value-based pricing, price skimming, loss leader pricing, which is not discounting, unless you do it wrong, and penetration pricing, which is also not discounting unless you do it wrong, dynamic pricing, bundle pricing, which is a form of discounting, and sort of the name speaks for itself, you bundle items together. And then you have premium discounting and anchor pricing, which is anchor, it looks like discounting, where you say regularly $99.95, yours today for $89.95. Also done properly is not discounting, it's actually a pricing strategy. So that might be the best way to kick this off, is to throw all of those out there. And the one thing I would say, at the list of all of those, is that at the very beginning, when people start businesses, especially if they make something out of something else, whether it's plastic, metal, wood, whatever, the most common type of thinking is cost plus, where you basically say the wood cost me $14, it cost me $8 to whittle it, it cost me $4 to ship it, and I need to make this much when I'm done. So I'm taking the cost, I'm plussing some stuff on top of it, and then I'm selling it. That also could be the least sophisticated way of pricing, but it also can be very effective unless you don't review your costs regularly. So with that, I think that's a good jumping off point for the rest of the group, I hope. And if not, then you guys can throw me under the bus.
Okay, amazing. So obviously, we'll be digging deeper into all of those pricing types that you mentioned. I think they all are going to have their own specific applications. But we are going to set the stage a little bit more in terms of the differences between pricing and discounting strategies. So Eric, I'm actually going to move to you because you bring a very interesting perspective to the panel, which is going to be slightly more technical and development perspective. So let's say if I am speaking technically, pricing is going to be a very different application versus the discounting. So from your perspective, what is the real difference between pricing and discounting?
Well, pricing sets the base price that a user will see when they come into the site, and it might be determined by user groups or other factors, perhaps corporate purchasing contracts, or if you're a B2B site, it might be a special price list that is generated. That doesn't mean it's necessarily discounted. A discount is usually used in business-to-consumer sites, like when you go to buy a widget from wherever, and you're shopping for the widget. You go to Google Shopping, and you see 15 different prices there, and somebody's, you know what the list price is, but they're all discounting at different levels. The pricing models that I've been exposed to are primarily with manufacturers. They start with cost plus, but then they get complicated really fast because, for example, we have a customer that uses, they build industrial equipment, and the steel prices just went crazy in the last year and a half. They were getting steel from China, and then they couldn't get steel from China. So it just went, it like went up 30 to 40% within a few months. They're building units that are $10,000 to $20,000 a piece. Steel is a big component of that. So they can't do cost plus. They have to look at other pricing strategies. So in that case, they look at the market based pricing, who their competitors might be doing because they're manufacturing things too. And so, it gets really complicated super fast. The other thing I wanted to mention, and this is maybe jumping ahead a bit, is that when management considers what to do with pricing strategies, if they're representing these on a website in some customer-facing method, you have to consider how many levels of rules, business rules that are applied to the pricing. Like you can have a user group, you might have a special contract pricing, you might have a volume discount over time, you may have a discount if they prepay. If you start stacking all of these factors on top of each other, and then you talk to your developer about it, their head is going to explode. It's like, whoa, what is all this stuff? There's just too much going on here because you can have some really strange unintended consequences. So this management and marketing, I think, tend to come up with ideas that are creative, but sometimes they can't be implemented so easily. So you need to talk to the development team about how complex these pricing strategies are. And then discount, one more thing, discount might be off the top of that. So to make this even more crazy, let's just say your potential customer showed up at a trade show. Everybody remembers what those were from back in the day. They show up at a booth and they get a special discount code for $500 off this industrial equipment. I mean, that's a pure discount. You use a code. So, but where does that discount get applied? Does it get applied before shipping? Or after shipping, or to the wholesale cost, or where? So, I mean, these are all factors that come into play here. It can get kind of crazy. I hope I didn't blow your minds there.
So some amazing insights there. And Eric, you may have contradicted with yourself successfully, because initially you mentioned that, discounts are really for B2C, but then you provided a lot of examples for B2B as well.
That's so true.
Yeah, discounts are definitely applicable for B2B. Salespeople would not be able to meet their numbers if they did not have, let's say, the end of the quarter discounts or end of the year discounts. So discounts are definitely applicable. The reason why you see the discounts more commonly in the B2C space is because in most cases, discounts are probably going to be affiliated with a coupon code. And if you talk purely from the accounting perspective, accounting does not understand coupon. So when you talk about the one-to-one correlation between your coupon and discount, probably coupons are nothing but your discounts in the accounting terms. So typically pricing does not really have a code that is going to be public facing. It may have a code inside your system, but you are not going to have a public-facing pricing code that you bring this code and then I'm actually going to give you this special price. You give them a special price because it could be because of either based on a zip code, a location, warehouse, could be a customer group, loyalty, the scenarios that you mentioned. All right. So Dave, I'm actually going to move to you next. From your perspective, you know, what is the real difference between pricing and discount? Do you agree, disagree with whatever has been said so far?
Yeah, Sam, thank you. The big difference between pricing strategy and discount strategy is one word, fear. If you're not set in your business's pricing, and this is different between B2B and B2C, of course. And if you're not measuring to make sure that you understand the impact of your pricing and making sure that you're actually moving the needle and responding appropriately, then you need to take advantage of those first. But the first thing that you need to really think about is what is that value that you're bringing to any interaction? And, you know, we just got done talking about coupon strategies. That's part of marketing, right? What you're trying to do is gather people's attention, and pricing is one of the most important ways to do that. Amazon has always led from a price competitive standpoint, and they drive the every nickel out of any interaction. And so they just kind of pull everything down, and that's the power of really knowing your numbers. But if you don't take it back and really think about it, especially in B2B, which is where I kind of want to level, because we work mostly in manufacturing and B2B services. If you're not really thinking about what your pricing says about your product or especially your service, you need to take a hard look at what that is. I did this when I was starting BusyWeb. You know, 1999, I was starting BusyWeb, and there was all kinds of stuff out there. And so I was doing like $500 websites, baby. You know, anything that I could do. And the sad truth is that a $500 website and a $50,000 website often pretty much have exactly the same needs and are going to require exactly the same amount of time to build them. The only difference is you're going to be a lot skinnier at the end of doing one than the other, right? So you need to step up and to really think about what you're doing. So and let me just lean into the services space for one second, because that's where I live. Take a little bit of time and just test out doubling your pricing. Just give it a shot, see what happens. And you might want to do this to a landing page where you're just going to do an A/B test, do an advertisement against your product, your service for a thing, and then just try it. Like one for $5,000, one for $10,000. And see where you're at and see where the value is inside of that. So there's so much inside of here. You know, Steve did a really great job of rounding up all of the stuff that you put into the write-up. But, you know, there's if you're looking at cost plus, you're looking at competition in a commodity-based business, right? But the rest of them, competition, value, and especially dynamic and premium pricing, are where you can really set your brand and set people's minds in the space that they're actually going to value your product, your service more because you charge more for it. It's just a psychological shortcut, right? If I'm paying for something, I know that it's of more value than what anything else might be. So if you have two products of equal or similar displacement, the one that's more expensive is going to be seen as higher quality, and the one that's less expensive is probably going to be tougher to engage with, depending on the kind of people that you're working with. So what I'm saying, Sam, is that I'm all over the board on this dang pricing thing. And the reason that I am is that you always need to work back from measuring what you're getting and if your pricing strategy is working for you, because there's no separation between pricing and marketing your business.
Okay, some amazing insights there, and could not agree more. And I think fear is really the summary of pricing. A lot of marketers, they don't like to charge for their services just because they are afraid of charging them, and they are afraid of losing business and losing market share, and they are never going to try. And so that's definitely the case. By the way, I would love to see that $500 website. I don't know how that appeared.
If you go back in the Wayback Machine, you're going to see some crappy websites that I created when it was just me. There's a reason I've hired a lot of people, because I suck as a designer, but I'm okay as a business owner. So
you would probably make a really good LinkedIn post with before and after.
You got it. You got it.
All right. Amazing. Thank you so much, Dave. So David Chrysler, you know, I'm actually going to move to you from your perspective. Obviously, You have worked in a lot of, you know, traditional businesses as well. And obviously the pricing was your tool when you had to meet your number, when you have to have that P&L responsibility. So from your perspective, what are some specific applications that you have seen from the pricing and discounting perspective, and which were more effective, pricing or discounting, when you were trying to meet your numbers?
Well, from my standpoint, Sam, it is really a combination effort between what's the strategy in terms of cost plus, what's the strategy from a sales and marketing perspective to get you where you want to be in the marketplace. And I think, you know, Dave and Eric, you guys both did a really good job of kind of laying that out in terms of monitoring the testing of that. The majority of the manufacturing facilities that I've been into, Eric, to your point, start off with cost plus, but I really look at it as a hybrid model, because you're doing cost plus, especially in a manufacturing environment that has a fully integrated ERP where you're used to that. You're applying, in some cases, standard costing, and then you are also doing a competitive analysis and market testing. And throughout your marketing and sales cycles, you are probably doing some discounting, testing, and or anchor pricing, depending on what types of products you're manufacturing and or just selling, if you are a distributor, let's say. So my approach is, you know, it's multifunctional, and it is typically going to be a hybrid approach that gets you to the best place that kind of satisfies all of the different areas that you're trying to check off. Sam, to your point, to be able to hit the numbers without that monitoring and testing and, you know, being able to go back to, Eric, you brought up about the supply chain and that impacting and material pricing. Without all those factors coming into play and looking at it from the macro and how each one of them impacts, it's going to be really hard to just say line in the sand, we're going straight cost plus, or we're going straight value based, let's say. And, you know, Dave, back to your kind of example, in a service based business, it's easy to do that. In more of a manufacturing space, it's more challenging to do that. You have other requirements that you're trying to satisfy, especially if you're, you know, responsible from a P&L standpoint. So hopefully that kind of gives you a little bit of insight into some of the things that I've had to navigate in the past, Sam.
Okay, some amazing insights there. And you are absolutely right that pricing is definitely going to be an experiment. You cannot really firm your mind on a specific strategy and just rely on that this is going to work. You really need to try, even if you don't have the technology and tools available at your fingertips to be able to do the A-B testing. You need to do A-B testing in the old-fashioned way. But you definitely do need to do the testing. So thank you so much for that insight. Colin, I'm actually going to move to you. I'm pretty sure you are going to have fascinating data points overall from the pricing and discounting perspective. So what's your perspective? Do you agree, disagree with anything that has been said so far? What's your perspective on pricing versus discounting?
Yeah, definitely draw a pretty strong distinction between the two. I think when you say pricing, I like to think of that as the everyday pricing. So if you walk into a store, stumble upon a website, right, that's the price you're going to see. And then discounting is the way that you try and drive incremental units or volume. So there's so many different ways, right, that we can discount. Now, one thing when we talked about cost plus, right, I think that's often the starting point. And the reason that I think it's the starting point is that we tend to know what our P&Ls look like, what the margin is that we need to be able to run a business. And so cost plus is guaranteed to get you to that starting point. And then the fun starts, right? You get to start experimenting with what if we move pricing up and down, right? If I lower my price a little bit, am I driving more units or not? If I bring my price up, am I actually losing volume? And so I like to think about playing with pricing as a game or an experiment. So coming back to what Dave said about getting measurements, right? You're not going to know what price you can be at until you start to play the game of pushing it up and down. Now, if you're, say, selling something in a store or selling something B2B, that's probably harder because you don't have as many plays of a game. But in the online space, the great thing is that you can change your price weekly or daily or serve up different prices to different people. So you have this really rich environment in which to run experiments. And there's really no cost no real cost to making changes on the fly and learning. So I recommend this approach a lot of like really, really experiment, play with pricing. The double your price thing is genius, right? Play the game. Can I double my price? Can I quadruple my price? What are consumers telling me about the value of my brand based on their reaction to my different prices? And then the way I think that this can interact with discounting as well is at the end of the day, when you take into account pricing, so the volume that you sold not on promotion or discount, and then discounting and the volume you sold there, when you blend those together, you get to what I like to call a net effective price or a net unit cost. And if you know that your P&L needs a cost plus, or let's say you need a 30% margin to be able to keep the lights on, there's a lot of ways to get there with combinations of discounting and pricing. So you can play with those net prices, right? Try a higher margin, a lower margin on promotion and off, and get to the same point. It does get confusing, right? That we talked about earlier, with all those different layers of promotions. But if you can get to the end, what is my net price that I'm selling it for after I weigh all these different tactics, then you know that you've protected yourself and your P&L and that you can run profitably. And then you just had this fantastic environment to run all kinds of experiments and really learn what drives your business.
Yeah, I completely agree. So some amazing points there. Number one, obviously the cost plus is always going to be the starting point, because as Dave Meyer said, that, you know what, I mean, initially everybody is going to be super fearful about their business. And the more fearful you are, the more cost plus you are going to do, because you cannot go any lower than that. So any businesses that are not going to be know or understand their business really well, or their competitive landscape really well, or know their products and services and know how to price them well, most likely they are going to choose the cost plus strategy. And that is probably the most common, especially if you talk about some of the traditional businesses, for example, manufacturers. I can almost guarantee that 80% of the manufacturers are probably going to price based on cost plus. Now think about this, guys, how much money you are losing just because you don't know how to experiment. You don't have tools and technologies to be able to experiment, to be able to find out what you might be able to charge. So some amazing points there. And obviously, you know, once you have the tools and technologies to be able to experiment, to be able to draw the trend historically. And again, the pricing is not going to be, you know, you experiment just in 1 month and, you know, set and forget. It doesn't work that way. You need to be able to analyze the trends. You need, a lot more data points related to different geography, data points related to different customer groups. The more data points that you have, the more relevant pricing you are going to be able to propose to your specific customer groups. And the more micro customer groups you have, the higher chances you are going to get that you will be able to charge far more. Because if you are going to charge universal price across the board, most likely some of the customers are not going to be happy about it. So the more experimentation, the more data points that you have, the more you will be able to get far more margin, obviously, you know, from your product offering. So now we are going to dig deeper into those, pricing types. We have a lot of different pricing types. They are relevant in each specific industry and each specific product offerings. One specific strategy that might be applicable in a specific product category may not be relevant in the other one. So Steve, I'm actually going to move to you. I know that we have many different categories, such as, you know, your cost plus, your, you know, competition based, you have value based. So I don't know if you're going to have any specific stories that you might be able to share, or just talk about the pros and cons of those approaches and where they should be utilizing all of these strategies in which business type and the product offering.
Okay. Well, I have one story that can sort of talk to the manufacturer or the retailer who is afraid to raise their prices. And I've told this in a different way in the past on other panels, and I'm going to try and keep this one short. But essentially, the math that I have done and the actual real life working out of this math has validated it, is that if you increase your margin by 10% for whatever product that you have, and these are all products that basically generally have between a 40 and 50 margin. So if you're working in that environment, that extra, say, $5 that you put at the end of a $100 product, because you bought it for $50, your margin is 100%, right? And so if you take 110% margin, multiply your $50 by 110, you're selling it for 105, right? So that $5 goes into the company's pocket, the owner's pocket. And the question that we asked a long time ago is, well, how many customers do I have to lose before I actually lose money? So we're not taking into account how many customers am I going to anger, you know, but we're assuming those are sort of the same thing. And that number is actually somewhere around 60% of your sales have to go down a huge number. It's well over 50 for you to lose money, increasing your margin by 10% on a product that averages between 40 and 50. So just put that in your pipe and smoke it overnight and let me know what you think. Then as far as your answer about what's best for people to use, I think we're all sort of in agreement here that most companies, especially manufacturers, start with the cost plus. And in reality, well, that's a horrible way to start a sentence, as if there is no reality. But I think what's true, let me put it this way, is that a company, the more sophisticated a company becomes, regardless of whether they make a widget or, you know, a technology widget or a manufactured widget, the more of these strategies they actually put in place. And they're not afraid of any of them. So each one has its own pros and cons. And, you know, you did ask to talk about them, and maybe I'll mention a few and let other people talk about others. But they all have a place in your business generally. And I'm not to say that all of them actually have a place in every business, but every business has more than one of these they should be using. So just to give an example, maybe let's talk about, I'm looking down the list here, loss leader pricing. This is actually something you see every day. You'll see a company, one of my favorite stories is a company that sold, they were selling into the hook and bullet crowd, people who buy a lot of handguns, they wear a lot of American flag shirts. There's very much an ethos that goes along with it. And a lot of them are preppers, right? They're getting ready for the apocalypse. And so they're selling to that crowd. Well, they went and bought a bunch of windproof, waterproof lighters. And they got them for basically like $2 or $3. And that was their loss leader. They basically sold into the prepper crowd. They targeted them on Facebook and they lost money. It cost them $2 or $3 to market to each of those people. They were playing with their conversion rates all along the way. But their concept was, we want as many email addresses of people who think like this as possible, because what we really want to do is sell them a T-shirt. They really were a T-shirt company. And in that story, they if you just took the sales of that lighter, they lost millions. But that lighter, even in the initial purchase, they actually made money, because something like 22% of the people who bought that lighter also bought a $3 T-shirt for $30. So not everybody can do that. If you're a high quality manufacturer of drills, you can't take an angle like that. So that's just one story, one example of how something like that could work for a company.
Okay, so some amazing stories and insights there, Steve. And I'm actually going to have a clarifying question for you, if you don't mind.
Okay.
And that is going to be related to your comment related to losing the customers. So if you obviously work in a business where, let's say, if you have a lot of existing customers, then you have a different problem versus when you are trying to acquire the newer customers. The price sensitivity of the newer customers are going to be very different from the existing customers. And obviously, we all know that price is not the only factor why people shop. When we are going to be looking at the existing customers, they are going to be looking at a lot more factors than price alone. But if you are going to be working on the newer customers, then the price sensitivity is going to be very different, because they don't know you, they trust you, they are coming for the first time. Their price sensitivity is going to be higher. So when you were looking at, let's say, how many customers do you lose, did you also look at how many newer customers you end up not acquiring? Or was acquiring newer customers wasn't a problem with this specific business?
It wasn't a problem with this specific business. It was a company that presented a high value and a high quality product. And I, you know, we'd like to try and have some data for this panel. And I read an article about 10 years ago that by a very important organization that I can't remember. I couldn't find it, that actually showed in their data, it was a very large data set, that only 26% of the people who shop on the web, so this must have been about 2011, actually care primarily about the price, right? And so I wholly agree with your sentence. Like, there's a lot of other things that people take into account. And I think that if you went around and asked most people, including people who sit on our end inside industries working with, you know, as consultants, if you ask them how many people care about the price when they're shopping, I bet most people would pick a number over 50%. And I don't think it's actually true. So value gets perceived in a lot of different ways, and price is actually primarily one of them. And that doesn't mean that it's an inhibitor to the sale. It means that it's a value modifier, a perception modifier. If I went to Patagonia's website and I saw a $99 puffy, and then I went to Arc'teryx's website and saw a similar puffy for $199, I have two choices. I either think, well, Arc'teryx's must be better, or Patagonia's must be discounting or something, right? And if you are a quality manufacturer or quality retailer, and your brand, you've done all your other branding pieces, you've talked to Dave at BusyWeb, and all your marketing pieces are in place, and so you don't look like a discounter, then people are going to expect it to be $199. And if you don't see it at $199, they actually might leave. So you can run into both, Sam, in that regard, in terms of pricing. So you bring up a good point, and it can go both ways. If you don't, pricing strategy is really important for establishing your place in the marketplace.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much. Awesome insight, Steve. So Eric, I'm actually going to move to you next. And obviously, when you are working with these strategies, if your customers are going to ask, hey, I am looking for a website, and the only thing I'm going to do is cost plus pricing strategy, your life is going to be much easier. But we know that it doesn't end there, right? So each time you are going to get a change request related to a pricing strategy, that's when you know that they are going to have some sort of changes in their pricing in their market. So in your experience, what are some of the instances where you have seen these changes in pricing when you are getting these requests from the client, and which one you have seen working in your experience?
Well, we build the tools that allow the customer to manipulate their own pricing and do their own testing. But I can give you an example, a real life example from this industrial manufacturer about how they use pricing. They start with a cost plus. This is the same example of the people who are using the steel. But then they don't look so much at competition-based pricing. They're kind of a mid-tier provider of these products. They are competing with some really huge companies who could just, squash them if they wanted to with price. But they instead have evolved to use value-based pricing. Now, this company's been around since 1930-something. So I don't know what their website looked like in 1930, but probably not the same as today. So their pricing goes into proposals, and this equipment will last many, many years. So they sell the value-based proposition as a way to avoid maintenance costs and a way to avoid a lot of hassles. So the tools that we give them are the ability to change products on a bulk basis, or set price lists for particular corporate entities so that the branches can buy, somebody like a plumber, a plumbing distributor who might be national, they would be a customer. So the national company gets price schedules, but they're also tweaked regionally. So a plumber in Texas gets a different price than a plumber in say California, because it's way more expensive in California. Even though they manufacture this stuff in the Midwest, they add on the shipping. So, but the base price is different. So that's the strategy that they use, and it's pretty well evolved. And this, by the way, is a company that uses manufacturers' reps. You cannot buy their products just on the website. You can ask for a quote, and they may adjust the quote. The sales rep may adjust the quote, but I'm not familiar with the intimate workings about that, but these are the tools that they use on their site.
Yeah, some amazing insights there. And by the way, if any companies are going to be using reps, obviously commission is going to be a big component there. That is going to drive how much pricing or what pricing they are going to get. And obviously, right, the commission is going to be different in California versus your Texas, because the cost of living is different at each places. So exactly. Some great points there. Yeah. Eric, thank you so much for that. Mm-hmm. So Dave, I'm actually going to move to you next, Dave Meyer. So in your case, obviously you are running in the trenches right there when you are doing these campaigns, when you are sending these coupons and you are monitoring these results, right? So from your experience, what are different pricing strategies that you have seen working for your clients? And I don't know if you're going to have any specific stories or any unique pricing scenarios that you have seen that have not been covered with the other panelists so far.
Yeah, there's a couple that I'd like to highlight. One is that discounting isn't always your first method in adjusting your price performance. So another thing that you might want to consider are bundling or adding additional services or adding value to an interaction. So if there's conversation that you're having, especially in these bigger conversations with larger B2B pricing, a lot of times the conversation in a sales engagement will focus on the bottom dollar. But if you're a salesperson or if you're in marketing and you're trying to bring people along to accept your pricing, you need to incorporate all the other things that go into that pricing decision. So if I provide a product that's a little bit more expensive, but that will last twice as long as the competitor, then I'm saving my customer money in the long run, right? So if I can have that conversation and get them into that mode, then they understand the value of my pricing. The other side, when you're looking at opportunities for discounting, and sometimes discounting is absolutely fine to do and a good business opportunity, is think about the cost per acquisition of new customers. If it costs you, let's say, $10,000 to acquire a new customer, you have anything less than that money to get additional customers. So you can afford to dip a little deeper into your pricing and maybe sometimes even into a loss leadership position if it gets you the customer, like in Steve's example. I think it was Steve that had the t-shirt example, to sell all of those additional t-shirts. So they brought you in and then they brought it back across, right? So for us and for our clients, what we like to try to do is, how much additional value can you make? It's worth spending money and time on your brand and on your trust factors in order to give yourself more price elasticity, right? So if people understand the value that you bring and if they're bought in to that you are the solution to their problem, they're willing to pay more. And then also just bringing it back and saying, you know, this is a direct line from the value that you get to what you're paying. And as long as I can cover that spread between what I'm charging and what the value is to my customer, and they understand that within my brand, then I'm golden and you're going to keep growing.
Okay, amazing. So I'm actually going to have one clarifying question for you, Dave, as well, just to connect the dots for our listeners. So when you mentioned, and a lot of you have mentioned the example of loss leader, and that could be slightly more technical term for a lot of people who might not be familiar with this specific pricing strategy. So obviously, in the sales term, most people understand, you know, what land and expand is. So land and expand is going to be you try to discount your product or services heavily to be able to land in the account. And then you are either trying to increase your offerings or trying to sell more, or next time you are going to be up for renewal, you are probably going to pay the amount that I was hoping you would pay. Mm-hmm. That's typically the land and. So is it similar to your loss leader, or is loss leader going to be different than your land and?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit different, but okay. It can be used the same way, right? So as long as you've got a customer that's bought in on the value of your service, and you've done the homework to make sure that you represent yourself as worth that cost,
yeah,
then you have a little bit more elasticity or a little bit more willingness to pay whatever the market will bear. So if there's tons of other substitutes in the space, if you're one of 1,000 different widget suppliers, you have less power in that solution, unless you can share and show that you are absolutely the best solution and you can help them save money in some other way by using your product.
Okay, amazing insights there. So I'm actually going to move to you, David Chrysler, now. So from your experience, have you seen any other pricing type that have not been discussed or mentioned so far? What would be your perspective overall when it comes to different pricing type and if you have seen any specific pricing type working with the customers or the clients that you have been working with, and if you might have any other stories that you might be able to share related to that.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. I wanted to go back to something Steve mentioned because I think it kind of ties into what, you know, how I want to answer this. And Steve, you had mentioned, you know, the sophistication of the companies that you're ultimately dealing with in terms of how sophisticated from a information perspective. So what kind of access to data do they have to be able to influence those pricing decisions and pricing strategy decisions? I think that's really important. And, you know, I saw that firsthand when I had a corporate position and we were doing multiple ERP implementations for new acquisition facilities. You know, again, typically it was in a manufacturing space. We talked about cost plus being the starting point. And what we would see with these new acquisition plants is, since they did not have a fully integrated ERP system and were typically working off of some type of legacy accounting system, inevitably most of those facilities would think, and I use that term very literally, think they understood and knew what their costs were. And it wasn't until we started to get them a little bit further along and fully integrated into an ERP system that they became more sophisticated, that they really knew what their costs then were, which then they could go and apply the cost plus model, which then they could go and expand to doing some competitive analysis and all of the other testing that everybody on the panel has mentioned. So I think for me, that's for sure a consideration, especially when you're starting out or you're looking to want to make some changes. Being able to understand the level of sophistication of information you have access to be able to influence those decisions. Because again, back to, you know, what Dave Meyer had mentioned, if you're not monitoring these and testing these strategies, then it's really all for nothing. And you really are kind of putting yourself out there in terms of guessing and waiting for the market to react. The market will always be the final indicator of it, but you want to be making smart decisions and smart testing with the information that you have available. So by no means am I saying that if you don't have a fully integrated ERP system, can you not start to do this, because everybody has access to financials and, you know, pertinent information. I just think that it is a consideration. The more sophisticated of a system and the more access to information and data points that you have, the more you can start to intertwine these strategies. And I believe the more benefit you will see quicker from doing from intertwining those strategies.
Yeah, so some very interesting insights. And I have a story, you know, to share with you guys related to pricing. Since you were talking about the integrated ERP system or the system, I have seen some crazy business processes related to pricing in a lot of different industries. For example, I was working with one of the guest client, and this client, what they had done is they had hired a bunch of interns just to monitor the pricing of their competitors. If you are familiar with the convenience industry business, especially if you talk about the gas stations, okay, the pricing is cutthroat. Okay, if your competitor is going to change the price, immediately you want to change the price. Otherwise, everybody's going to drive there and you are going to lose all the business. So these guys had literally hired people to be able to monitor this pricing. And, you know, that's how the pricing was driven. So I'm actually going to move to Colin, and I'm going to ask him if he has seen any specific pricing strategies in his experience, especially if you have seen how these companies monitored their competitors, in if that had any influence in terms of the pricing strategy that you might want to consider. What's been your experience overall when it comes to the different types of pricing strategy?
Yeah, and you kind of specifically called out the competitive one, and I'd like to address competitive pricing if that's okay. And kind of focus in on the CPG space and the things that we buy every day in the grocery store, because I know these won't apply to some of these other industries. But we like to, in CPG, talk about competition. I think many of us hold this belief that when consumers are making a choice, that they are really weighing all the options at any point in time and thinking about price. And when you get into the modeling and actually do the analysis, what I find, I'd say 98 times out of 100, is that competitive pricing is just not a variable that needs to be considered when making pricing decisions. Now, I see Steve nodding, but this would be considered heresy in some places to make this comment, that really what you need to focus on is your own pricing. That's going to explain most of the variation. And actually, take that one step.
You are preaching the gospel, my friend.
I think we're going to get along well, Steve. So take it one step further. Like, we like talking about pricing because it's sexy, right? We can make changes. We think we're influencing people. But for anyone listening that's in the CPG space, I would really press that distribution is the first thing. If you think about, like, we could sell, if we take that 10% price increase example, right? Maybe you could drop price by 10% and sell, say, 10% more units. That would be pretty great. But the reality is you also ate into your margin, so you actually didn't really make any more money at the end of the day. On the flip side, if you go sell distribution, you get into twice as many stores. You're doubling your volume at the same margin. And so for those of you out there building businesses and thinking about this, get your pricing to a good spot, right? To a spot where you're happy with your margins, and then focus on how can I sell more of this in different places. So maybe if you are online, getting into different marketplaces, if you're not just selling off your own website, right? If you could double your footprint, you could double your sales. It's really hard to do that through pricing.
If you see, this is the exact reason why there's such a thrust in what's called omni-channel marketing and omni-channel provisioning. So I have experience with outdoor retailers who sell, they have their own website, then they sell the same exact product three or four other places and at different price points, because they know that the price sensitivities is different and various levels of shipping costs or free shipping, because they know that's there's a sensitivity there too. So I think you're right on there. Yeah.
And pricing, I mean, pricing's hard. I know Steve had that awesome example of like a 10% price increase is way more than a 10% profit dollar in the number you had, depending on your margin. You could increase price by 10% and your profit dollars go up by almost 100%. We see that all the time.
By the way, for that client that I told the story of, that was a 500% increase in profit.
So their margins must have been like 5% or something.
Well, their margins were good, but their operating costs were too high. So they had to work on that.
Gotcha. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, when you can put $1, one penny down to the bottom line and you don't have to go through all those other filters.
All right, guys. So we are close to our time now. The only thing we can take is the closing advice. So Steve, I'm actually going to start with you. What is your short closing advice for today related to pricing?
I'm going to say, take a look at all of these types of pricing. And if you are a manufacturer or retailer and you're looking, you do a lot of cost plus pricing, look at the others. And specifically, if you're a manufacturer, a sophisticated assessment of your pricing model can also get you looking at, I'm going to say, Goldratt's theory of constraints and throughput accounting and production, because your constraint is not what you think it is. It's you probably think it's in your building. Like you can't produce enough because you need to hire more engineers, you need to hire more machinists. Most cases, that's not true. Most cases, the constraint is actually revenue. So you need to take Colin's advice, get some salespeople, and double or triple the number of stores or businesses that you're selling into.
Okay, amazing advice. Thank you so much, Steve, for that. So Eric, I'm actually going to move to you. What is your short closing advice?
Yeah, well, I totally agree with what Steve says. And I want to piggyback on that saying, If you have some exotic pricing strategies, consider not only the bottom line, but also how you're going to implement those, because some things are easier to do than others, and some things there might be unintended consequences. We want to test that stuff out.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much for that advice, Eric. And David, I'm actually going to move to you. What is your closing advice? Maybe I can take a couple of sentences.
Yeah, I think kind of combining what Steve and Eric both said, I mean, from my standpoint, it's don't be afraid to test. Don't be afraid to even consolidate some of your current strategies. Eric, to your point, if there are a lot of complex strategies at play, don't be afraid to try to streamline some of those and simplify it, because every additional factor that you add in, depending on, again, how sophisticated your systems are, could impact, you know, your cost. It could impact the ability for your sales team to be able to do, to implement that consistently. Thanks, Sam.
Okay, amazing. Thank you so much, David, for that. Colin, super short closing advice.
Yeah, so kind of picking up where David left off, test and learn is definitely key so that you understand your levers, right? What are the things that we can do? And then pull those with intention. Know the outcomes you seek and then choose the actions that will meet those outcomes.
All right, brilliant. And thank you so much, guys, for joining today. On that note, I really want to thank you, everyone, for your time and insights.
Thank you, Sam.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you. See ya.
I cannot thank our guests enough for coming on the show, for sharing their knowledge and journey. I always pick up learnings from our guests, and hopefully you learned something new today. If you want to learn more about Steve Rice, head over to .comjungle.com. It's .comjungle.com. If you want to learn more about Colin Davidson, head over to omniumcpg.com. It's omniumcpg.com. If you want to learn more about Dave Chrysler, head over to thechrysler.club. It's thechrysler.club. If you want to learn more about Eric Landman, head over to earthlinginteractive.com. It's earthlinginteractive.com. If you want to learn more about Dave Meyer, head over to busyweb.com. It's BIZZYWEB.com. Links and more information will also be available in the show notes. If anything in this podcast resonated with you and your business, you might want to check other related episodes, including the interview with A.L. Rosenberg, who discusses B2B e-commerce pricing nuances and how it is different and more complex than B2C. Also, the interview with Laurie McDonald, who discusses sales compensation best practices for organizations aiming to transition to e-commerce from the traditional sales model. Also, don't forget to subscribe and spread the word among folks with similar backgrounds. If you have any questions or comments about the show, please review and rate us on your favorite podcasting platform or DM me on any social channels. I'll try my best to respond personally and make sure you get help. Thank you, and I hope to get you on the next episode of the WBS Podcast.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the WBS Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on your favorite podcasting platform so you never miss an episode. For more information on growth strategies for SMBs using ERP and digital transformation, check out our community at wbs.rocks. We'll see you next time.